Welcome to Webcology. Webcology is the show that takes you into the deepest and darkest ends of the ecosystem on the internet. Our guides will take you on a journey into web marketing and bring you the experts and the information so that you can further explore the web marketing world. Now, here are the hosts of Webcology, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Webcology. It is Thursday, April the 24th. You're listening to WebmasterRadio.fm. This is Jim Hedger from MetaMen.com, joined by Dave Davies from Beanstalk Dash, Inc. And we have an amazing show for you today. Dave, how are you doing today?
I'm doing just great. Very excited about today's show.
Yeah, now today's show is we're going to have to move really quickly. One of our guests is about to be getting on an airplane, but he's an important guy to get on. We're going to be starting talking about cybersecurity, ID phishing, and the state of botnets and malware in our ecosystem. We have Ryan Shrestobatov from Panda Software. He's been on before when we did our last show on botnets. We're going to be rounding out the hour with Sarah Bird from SEO Moz. People may or may not know, there's a fella trying to register SEO as his own trademark, and today is the last day to block it. If you have any complaints about it and you want to complain to the U.S. Patent Office, today is the last day to try to stop this fella from registering, a very well-known phrase as his trademark. But we got to get moving. As I said, our very first guest, Ryan Shrestobatov, is going to be boarding an airplane out of, I believe, Denver sometime in the next hour. So we want to get him on really quickly. Ryan, are you on the phone now?
I am.
Excellent. Now, just for our guests, we're conducting this interview over a cell phone in what's likely a fairly noisy airport lounge. But Ryan, welcome to Webcology. I'm so glad you can make it today.
Yeah, no problem.
Now, you and I were speaking about 2 weeks ago for a print interview that I'm afraid I still have to write up about cybersecurity, about botnets, and about, well, the new use of botnets. I guess when we spoke about a year ago, we talked about botnets and click fraud, but as you were telling me, there's a new class of crime that the bot herders are using. Could you tell our guests about that?
Yes, what they're using, I think I talked with you about something called server-side polymorphism, and what this is and this is not an old technique, but something that's been used for a long time in the industry. We're talking about the old days of viruses. They're using polymorphic engines to mutate variations of the worm, the virus. But now what they're doing is they're mutating the variations on the server and providing malware on demand. So we in the industry call this as crimeware as a service, because people in the botnet can be instantly rendered the brand new variant of a malware in a matter of minutes with a remote command via HTTP. So it's quite complex in terms of trying to detect something like this because they don't have access to this engine to decode it. So you could be sitting infected and doing your thing, and then your antivirus software says, hey, you're infected with a bot, but before it has a chance to disinfect, the thing morphs. So that's really the idea here, and the emulation technologies that were being used in the antivirus industry do not work on the endpoint when the polymorphic virus is working from the server side. And somebody could be changing the binaries like every second up there manually, so it's really difficult to locate this.
So basically what you're saying is, even if somebody has what they consider to be state-of-the-art antivirus software, and that software even catches the problem, that problem can morph, can change, can alter itself, and really, these hackers, these criminals, have developed a class of virus that's almost uncatchable.
Yeah, it's because everything today is identity theft, and like we spoke in the last show, some time ago, it's botnets, Trojans, but it's gotten very sophisticated now, where we've actually found and done a research against 1.2 million different consumer PCs. We found that out of them that had up-to-date active anti-malware software, we found that there's a 23% active infection rate that means they had malware on their systems while their security software supposedly was up to date and working. That means it missed the threat, but it was active in memory. So that means they're probably a victim of identity theft at that point.
So approximately 1 in 4 computers, so 23%, have this malware running. The hackers are recording keystrokes, taking information, and using this information to perform identity theft and presumably to take money out of people's bank accounts, get mortgages in their names, car loans, etc. Is that correct?
Pretty much, and it's actually a rise in that trend, and we find that 40% of the malware that we see on a daily basis, which happens to be 4,000 samples, is identity theft-based Trojans. That means 40% to 4,000 new pieces of malware a day equates to a 40% crimeware type.
That's a terrifying figure. You'd think that the banks or that governments would be interested in solving this problem. Have you had at Panda Software? You have you and the RSA have actually been led one of the few successful botnet busts in the past. Is there more attention being paid by the Fed? Given that was the ClickBot A bust. Is there more attention being given by the federal government or by the banking companies?
Yeah, but obviously, if it's an untraceable botnet, then it's really difficult to detect or counteract. I mean, obviously, what banks are trying to do is increase authentication, meaning that they put additional mechanisms for validation. Like, for example, Bank of America came out with out-of-bounds authentication, which means sending a passcode to your cell phone, which is out of the bounds of current authentication. And some of those approaches, you know, maybe solve 20 to 30% of standard keyloggers, but most, identity theft Trojans today will inject code into the page itself and extract the information way before the user has a chance to actually authenticate. So authentication mechanisms are not enough, so therefore technologies have to be designed to find an active threat on the PC and interact in conjunction with the authentication procedure that the bank has incorporated. So it's actually a very interesting situation that we have here that needs to, more initiatives from the government, such as the FBI or other central, government agencies to combat this threat. But when a lot of this stuff is coming from foreign countries that have, very laxative laws on, extradition as well as cybercrime, it's a little bit hard to, stop it. So we need to, from an American perspective, develop better technologies that are capable of finding these things from a proactive perspective.
So does the solution, does it look like it's going to come more in the form of increased security from services such as yours, or are we going to have to deal with the inconveniences of, things like one-time keys and things like that? Sending to your cell phone a one-time key works once, you log it, now it never works again.
Well, actually, some of the directions here is that we'd be talking about doing sort of a transactional security. So that means being able to load a small amount of code on the user's PC, scanning all memory in 2 seconds, then writing a verdict back to the banking portal whether or not that user's infected with an active Trojan or not. Actually, Panda had developed a solution called Panda Security for Internet Transactions, which accomplishes this and was actually one of the approaches to mainly solve this issue with identity theft.
Now, why is it that we as webmasters or as network technicians can't protect our websites or our networks against these intrusions?
And you know what's interesting, Jim, is that I just got a report this morning that hackers are after the webmasters now. And this is interesting because we just heard that there's a supposedly new vulnerability in Microsoft IIS and the fact that they're capable of doing a SQL injection to manipulate the web page and essentially insert malicious JavaScript code.
Okay, so
we're seeing about 282,000 different websites hacked.
Okay, I'm sorry, the airline attendant, sort of, how many sites were you saying you're seeing hacked?
282,000 is the current rating. And if you look, it's also being reported by other vendors as well. But this morning, we found 282,000 different web pages being hacked. This is all through SQL injections to manipulate the web page, but it's actually related to a recent Microsoft advisory that was actually published a couple of days ago talking about this possibility.
So what do we do about that? Like, now, how does your average user, not let alone the webmasters, but how does your average user now know, how do they protect themselves against this?
Well, it's difficult, like I said. I mean, because that a lot of this stuff isn't classified, you need to start utilizing proactive technologies. So that means rather than using signature-based solutions, which all rely on a DAT file being updated and the antivirus lab going through each sample and producing a vaccine, it's necessary we have stuff that can calculate the potential of a particular file or attack as being bad or not. And that's something that needs to, you know, be addressed from an industry perspective. Some, you know, some technologies are more matured than the others, but, you know, heuristics was the first stride that was attempting to, you know, calculate potential of file dangers, and it's only going to get better as time proceeds.
Now, Ryan, I realize you're about to board an airplane, and time is tight here, so I want to move quickly through some of the other stuff that we spoke about a couple of weeks ago.
Sure.
One of the movements, and I think maybe this might be a long-term solution, but one of the movements in, well, just in general in technology, is moving away from the big box computer unit or even your laptop and into server-side software or cloud computing. Now, given that the botnets tend to run off of individual computers, is cloud computing a solution to some of these cyber problems we're seeing today?
Yeah, because a lot of the stuff here could be done from the cloud. So, for example, there is a cloud computing model that is based on antivirus, which is called Herd Intelligence, which collects information from the community but does all the anti-malware processing in the cloud and provides a verdict to a very small agent that resides on the user's PC. So this actually raises the bar substantially because you can have input from millions of different PCs immediately, and part of this would be to correlate all the behavioral traces and produce vaccines without having to have hundreds of PCs infected rather than just a couple of PCs that might be infected. We can get data as early as 8 to 10 hours before the attack becomes quite prevalent in the industry.
Unfortunately, in the meantime, we're still stuck with our big boxes, with our laptops, even with our PDAs, which I understand are also targets for infection. Is it at the point now where a guy like me, I'm a very active person, I'm working like 12 to 14 hours a day, and I don't have time to go down to the bank to check my bank balance. I prefer doing it online. Right now, though, would it be smart of me to forego my online access and just go down to the bank machine?
Yeah, it might be a good idea for now, you know, but like I said, we offer some interesting ways that are free online to check whether or not you're infected. We actually have something called Banker Trojan Heuristics, which are specialized on finding, you know, some of these infections. If you go to infected or not, you know, I mentioned this about, you know, 2 years ago or a year ago when I talked to you, and this has basically been updated and revised, and people can scan their PCs for free and see if they're already infected with a data breach, and that means whether or not Banker Trojan is present.
So is there a URL that you could offer our listeners to enter in their computer?
Infectedornot.com.
Okay, so that's infectedornot.com. Now, you directed me to another one, nanoscan.com.
They've all been merged. NanoScan and TotalScan have been merged now. So they're basically now one site, and it's called ActiveScan 2.0, which is basically a super cloud scanner.
That's phenomenal. That's a great service to offer people. I remember when you had me go check my computer, I was legitimately surprised that I wasn't infected, given that I'm an SEO and I go to about a billion websites a day.
But you should definitely check it again.
Oh, again and again and again. It's one of those things, actually, I'm doing at the beginning of every week now. And that, you know what, that's probably not even vigilance enough, is it?
And it's been some clothing articles, and that's a security checkpoint.
Looks like the overhead PA is getting a little out of control now.
Okay, you probably have to go, eh?
Yeah, I'm pretty close to a flight leaving now. Looks like they're about to board.
Okay, Ryan, thank you so much for spending the time with us on WebCology. I hope you have a great flight. And friends, this was Ryan Shostabatov, excuse me, from Panda Software. Folks, go check out some of the URLs he gave us. Again, Ryan, thank you so much for being on the show. And we're going to be going to break here on WebCology on webmasterradio.fm. We'll be coming back in a few moments with Sarah Bird from SEO Moz, and we're going to be talking about the fellow who wants to register SEO as his personal trademark. I think Sarah has quite a bit to say on that, and if you all stay tuned, this is Jim Hedger from MetaMen.com and Dave Davies from BeanstalkDashInc.com. You're listening to WebCology on WebmasterRadio.fm. We'll be back after these minutes.
Sit tight and don't move. WebCology. We'll be back after this short break.
Hey, this is Danny Sullivan from the Daily Search Cast. You know, we love bringing you the news every day, and that's made possible by the sponsorship of BruceClay.com. They've just made Inc. Magazine's list of the fastest growing private businesses. They've exhibited and sponsored at my conferences from the very beginning. Bruce has got that long-standing search engine relationship chart, had been out there with the code of ethics, been a search engine expert in the field for ages. But did you know that Bruce Clay can do more than help you with just SEO? They can do PPC, web analytics, web design, marketing strategy, promotion, and branding. Everything you need for success in the online marketplace, you can check it out from the professionals at Bruce Clay Incorporated. For over 10 years, offices worldwide, they've got answers you need. Check them out today at BruceClay.com.
Bruce Clay Incorporated.
Need help improving your PPC campaigns? Tired of spending all your time swamped with spreadsheets and manual updates? Turn to Adapt SEM software to optimize your campaigns and to reach your goals. Adapt SEM is one of the most affordable and reliable tools on the market for improving PPC campaigns. Adapt SEM not only optimizes your bids, but also gives you keyword suggestions, competitive research, and helps to test ads, all in one place at flat rate pricing and no long-term commitments. Learn how Adapt SEM can help manage your PPC campaigns better. Check out our free webinar at adapt.com/webmasterradio. Sign up now for a free personal tour. adapt.com/webmasterradio. Stand by. This is a Life Tips Quick Tip.
Travel tips. Want to check the arrival or departure times in a hurry? No problem. Simply text your flight number to Google. For example, let's say your lovely wife is flying in from home on a business trip from LA this afternoon. Pop open your iPhone, punch in an SMS text message to 466-453, which spells Google, by the way. Type in US space Airways space 6342, the flight number. Within seconds, you'll see the flight has arrived on time. So don't be late. Head off and pick up your wife.
Listen for more quick tips every day right here. And listen to Life Tips Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. Or on demand anytime inside the Entertainment Channel. Only on WebmasterRadio.fm. Affiliate marketing is changing rapidly. Stay ahead of the trends with Affiliate Marketing Insider.
One of my old friends and also a leader in the industry, Chris Jones, who is the CEO and president of Pepper Jam.
We have to be careful. We've known each other so long that I guess we can't just carry our personal conversations here in front of all your listeners, can we?
Yeah, let's not talk about those dance contests, okay?
Affiliate Marketing Insider.
Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, or on demand anytime inside the Affiliate Marketing Channel.
Only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
The whoring of Facebook for promotional purposes continues with the WebmasterRadio.fm Facebook fan page. Join our fans by clicking the Facebook logo on the WebmasterRadio.fm homepage and keep up to date with all the latest. Become a fan on Facebook.
Commercials off. Now back to Webcology, only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
Here are the hosts, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Welcome back to Webcology here on WebmasterRadio.fm. This is Jim Hedger from MetaMen.com and Dave Davies from BeanstalkDashInc.com. And may it please our listeners, we are joined by Sarah Bird Esquire. Sarah, do you actually work for SEO Moz? Are you the lawyer for SEO Moz?
I am. I am general counsel at SEO Moz.
Well, as I said, may it please our listeners, we have the general counsel of SEO Moz, Sarah Bird, on the line. Sarah, welcome to Webcology.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate you guys having me on today. It's a great day to do this program, so your timing is fantastic.
Well, as Dave was telling me before the segment started, it's an interesting day to do it because this is the last day to file a challenge to Jason Gambert's application for the trade SEO.
That's right. You've got exactly right. Anyone out there who is concerned about this application and believes that they could be harmed by someone else owning the trademark SEO has got to get moving today. It's the last afternoon to do it, and it's pretty quick and easy. You can do it online, and I really encourage anyone out there who thinks they could be harmed to go and take action.
Now, Sarah, what can you... I had the opportunity on WebProNews.com to watch the video, a lot of history of what happened here. Many of our listeners won't have. What can you tell us about how did it come to this? How did we get to where we are right now?
Well, Jason Gambert filed an application last year in May, so about a year ago, to trademark the word SEO in capital letters. Anyone who thinks that they have a registrable mark can file an application, so far so good. What's interesting, though, is the fact that he's trying to register what's really just a common generic word. I mean, SEO has been in use for well over a decade. It's just generic and descriptive of a whole industry. And interestingly, he's not even trying to use it in a distinctive way. You know, he's not making coffee pots or something. You could register SEO for coffee pots or a restaurant chain, but you cannot do it for internet marketing services. So he filed his application, very broadly written, would have given him, if granted, expansive control over the term in the industry. Luckily, the reviewing attorney at the trademark office, her job is to weed out the obvious problem applications. And, you know, they were spot on. They quickly rejected the application and said, this isn't going to work. It's a generic term. It means search engine optimization, and we have all this proof. And, you know, she listed several other objections he'd need to fix up. And he, in response, didn't withdraw his application. He just amended it. He tried to create arguments that he was not trying to trademark SEO for the purposes of search engine optimization, and it's a very confusing application if you read it. I'm not quite sure what he was trying to trademark it for, but he clearly tried to make an argument that, oh, I'm not doing search engine optimization. I'm doing some kind of marketing process, and it's not this other thing, so that shouldn't be an objection. And he goes back and forth with the trademark office maybe three or four times, getting rejected and then amending his application. Finally, I'm just speculating, but I think that the reviewing attorney kind of gave up and was so confused by what he was trying to do, and she just had to take his word for it. You know, if you're not doing search engine optimization and you're doing something else, then all right, we'll preliminary approve this to go to the next step. And his approval to go to the next step was given in January, and on March it went forward to the publication stage. publication, just so your listeners are aware, is not a final step. It's it's an intermediary step where all these potential marks are published to the world, and the world is put on notice. You know, hey, if you've got a problem with any of these potential registrations, you need to let us know soon, within 30 days specifically. So that's where we are. We're in this, publication opportunity to object stage. Unfortunately, the last day to object is today. So if you want to, let the trademark office know that this is not going to work, you need to file either a request for more time today, which is very simple, quick process. It will take you less than a half an hour, and you can do it online. Or you need to put together an official notice of opposition and file that today, which can also be done online. But it's a little more time-consuming, and most listeners will probably want to speak with their trademark attorney about that.
Now, just to clarify the damage that Jason might be doing to the industry, we live in a world where Nike can register "Just Do It" as a slogan, and where Walmart can own the smiley face. Now, I'm still allowed to say "just do it" in common conversation, and I can use emoticons in my emails. What would Jason Gambert's ownership of this trade do to the industry?
Well, that's a terrific question, and I think it's a good time to bring up, I assume that you don't have Jason on the show today, but a person claiming to be Jason Gambert has actually written a post on jasongambert.com describing what his intentions are, which I think is really important to reveal to the listeners. His intention is to allow certain people who follow certain standards to use the word SEO to talk about their industry and their practice, but to prohibit other people from doing so. So if you're practicing SEO and you call yourself an SEO or have the expression SEO on your website to provide internet marketing services, and he doesn't like what you're doing, he's going to send you a cease and desist letter that says, hey, knock it off, or pay me some money, and I will license it to you, and he'll try to enforce that. I think that this will have a disparate impact on the sort of smaller solo shop guys because they have less resources and less knowledge base to draw on to defend these kinds of cease and desist letters. And, I think bigger SEO firms would challenge the use and say, hey, you can't stop me from doing this because you should never have gotten the mark in the first place. And all kinds of lawsuits would ensue over that, which would, take thousands and thousands of dollars and time and effort and worry. So it really does give him a right to control marketing, control how this is used in commerce, and he can prevent other people from doing it. He claims on his post, if it is him, and it's the internet, so who knows who really does anything, but if we assume it's him, we have no reason not to since the real Jason Gambert hasn't disclaimed it or anything. He claims that his goal is just altruistic and that he's trying to impose standards upon a community. It's difficult to, it's difficult to know how to take that. And I think a lot of people in the community have responded with, skepticism is perhaps an understatement. Whether he's motivated by altruism or AdWords, it's hard to say. That's the other interesting point of this conversation is, thanks to our, marketing techniques and programs, people who have trademark rights own special ways of monetizing their brand. You can, Google's going to let trademark owners purchase their brand and no one else if the trademark owner says so. So I think there are all kinds of interesting ways that Jason Gambert could monetize this if he chose to. I think interestingly, there are sort of two overarching concerns with his attempt to trademark SEO for altruistic reasons. One is that even if it is his attempt to perform this act for the betterment of the community, it still, unfortunately for him, is in violation of trademark law. You can't just decide to co-opt a generic term for your own private use. If he wants to create standards, that's fine, but he needs to He needs to use another word. He needs to use a distinctive word, preferably one that's arbitrary and fanciful, like SEO mods. You know, what the heck does that mean, right? It's a great, it's got a lot of trademark qualities. So he needs to find a new word and use that word to brand his standards. Secondly, I think the community in general has recognized that his attempt to do this feels very presumptuous. He's not been involved in the community. He's not engaged in SEMPO or any of the other organizations that are currently working towards standards. He hasn't talked about what his idea of standards would be if he was in charge of doing that. I think everyone's kind of wondering, you know, well, when was he planning on engaging the community in this conversation? Was he going to wait until he already owned the mark and then kindly let us in on the strategy here? You know, it feels disingenuous, I think, to a lot of people. So,
well, Sarah, I guess a few moments, because we have some questions from the chat room that are just starting to pour in now.
Sure.
Do you mind if I fire a few at you?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Well, a poster named One Cent would like to know, and I'm quoting the question, by law, if I used SEO before his final date, what could he do?
Before his final date. I'm not sure exactly what before his final date is, but I will answer the question.
I'm assuming he means before it's registered.
Before it's registered, he can't do anything. He doesn't have any particular rights. He can send you a letter, but it has much less backing. I mean, theoretically, when you own a trademark, you own it before you register it. For example, SEOMA is not registered, but we own it, and we have the right to stop other people from doing anything with it. It's what we call common law trademark, also known as the poor man's trademark. So theoretically, he has that, but he couldn't waltz into court with that. He couldn't do anything. I mean, well, that's why you go through the process of registration, is so that you have the opportunity to get the law behind you and take matters to court if you need to. You know, so before he gets the certificate of registration, he has much less oomph behind him. After he gets a certificate of registration, he can take people to court over using the word SEO. Whether or not he'd win or not is a different question, but he certainly is the presumptive winner, and then you have to kind of work against that in a court of law.
Well, as a follow-up, OneCent has a domain, SEOwhatever.com, and you have the domain SEOMoz. Could Mr. Gambert damage either of you?
He would certainly try to, I imagine. I mean, he would claim that depends on whether or not we're following by his standards or not. Let's assume, for the interesting argument, that he doesn't like the way that I or this OneCent does business. He would send us a cease and desist letter. He could try to take this to the Uniform Domain Resolution Act, and get that domain turned over to him, essentially. He could do all kinds. He could cause all kinds of trouble. Again, we have the opportunity to respond later if he tries to do that. And believe me, I would fight it tooth and nail then too. Because the other interesting thing about his application is that he claims he didn't start using it until February of 2007. That makes his claim pretty easy to overcome for the rest of us who've been using this for well over a decade. So he'll have a really hard time proving that he has some special right to this expression.
Okay, Rhea is asking if we have any knowledge of how many companies or individuals have already filed opposition, and what's the next step after the opposition door closes?
That's a great question. You know, to my knowledge, SEOMoz is the only one who has filed a notice of opposition. I have had emails from people who indicate to me they intend on filing for an extension of time, which is another great way to preserve your rights. You can file your notice of opposition later, but right now, if you just want to buy yourself some time, you can file that notice of extension of time, sorry, request for extension of time. To my knowledge, no one has actually done that, so I'm kind of surprised, and I'm hoping that your program here today will get people to take the time and do this and help protect the community in this important way.
Now, what time do we have until to get this done? I know today is the last day. What is the cutoff?
You know, I assume it's 5 p.m., but I'm actually not sure, and I don't know if that's Eastern time or not, but the sooner the better that people can jump on this. And really, it's not going to take a lot of time.
Where do we do this? Of course, a very important question.
Yes, I'm so glad you asked. You can do it online at the United States Patent and Trademark Office. The website actually is estta.uspto.gov. That's the electronic filing domain for the United States Patent and Trademark Office. So if you get on there, really the only information you're going to need is the application number of the trademark, which is available on my post. I link to it, so there's a serial reference number for this particular application that you're going to need to, in the website, put in so that they know which application you are requesting more time for. And then you just need to know your own information, who you are and what your address is and, you know, why you need more time. Most people, I presume, are just going to need more time to talk to their attorney and do some research, which is perfectly legitimate. These requests for more time are liberally granted.
Jurisdiction do we have this covered? Now, this is being filed in the United States. I personally reside in Canada, obviously use the term SEO smattered throughout our site and have for years. What jurisdiction does this have? Is there any claim towards people who may be operating companies in Canada or other parts of the world?
Well, it depends on where your audience is. If you're providing SEO services for companies in the United States, then he's going to try to stop you from using SEO to market to those companies in the United States. And just because you're in Canada doesn't mean that you can't go online and file an objection. So the important thing to think about here is not where am I in the world, it's where am I doing business and where am I going to experience harm. So if you are in Canada and you provide SEO services to clients in the United States, you can still go online and object to this, and you should. And you should go online and object to this if you feel like this is going to harm you from being able to talk about what you do to your U.S. clients.
Now, Sarah, while I realize that this is really putting you on the spot and making a prediction is, it's very difficult. What's your gut sense of Gambert's chances here?
Well, I actually feel pretty confident about that, actually. I don't really see that he has much hope at all. I'm not sure at all what argument he can make. It feels very disingenuous to me that he's not using this for search engine optimization purposes. So I would be sort of shocked and amazed if he could pull this out of his hat, that he's been using this for, for well over a decade, and in this context, I just don't know what he can do. And if he gets the SEO mark registered for something other than search engine optimization, we've still accomplished our goal, which is that, fine, now we can go, I'll continue to go on and use SEO for this, marketing purpose, internet marketing purpose. So either way, I feel very confident. My hope is that whatever Mr. Gambert is doing right now, I hope he is talking to an attorney. I hope he's sitting down with that attorney and discussing, frankly, what his objectives are and what's the best way to legally go about that. I feel confident that when he talks to an attorney, that attorney will help him understand that trademarking SEO in this context is not going to fly, and that if he wants to have... if he wants to start some sort of standards organization, there are much better ways to do it.
Rhea asks, if I don't have SEO in my trademark, but I provide the service and want to use it, am I still okay to file opposition, or do I have to be someone like SEO Moz or SEO Book?
No, she can still do that. If she's going to say in her promotional materials, I will perform search engine optimization services for you or SEO services for you, then she still has, she'll still be harmed because she won't be able to talk like that in the future if this mark gets registered.
Now, I know one of the initial objections was using the term services, ended up switching that and actually noting it's a process, not a service. Now, I'm not a lawyer. Is there an opening there to allow for us to offer, you know, if we're saying, no, we're offering this as a service, we're calling this thing SEO, it's a service, we're not referring to it as a process. We're not calling it a process. Is that a loophole that can be used, or will that also be closed as well?
I believe that will be closed. I think that it's hard to have this conversation simply because it's hard to understand really what he was asking for in his application. It's extremely confusing application. So when I read it, it seemed to me, and I believe that the reviewing attorney also seemed to believe, that he claimed he was not providing search engine optimization services as a process, but that he was doing completely some other kind of marketing. But he never really describes what kind of marketing service he's providing. He just sort of speaks generally and tries to drive this, you know, artificial web between marketing services, internet marketing services, and SEO. And I simply believe that, you know, once we get testimony from people in the industry that talk about the broad reach of SEO and how artful and intelligent SEO is more than just manipulating a keyword here and there, that he will have no claim. There is no argument or distinction to be made between SEO, a process, and some kind of vague marketing service. It's just not gonna fly. You're talking about the same thing, just maybe at, you know, different levels of particularity.
Okay, Sarah, one of our listeners is actually filling out the opposition notice as she listens, and she wonders,
great,
do I choose the all goods in this class? She, in quotes, all goods in this class.
Gosh, this is a tough question for me to answer, simply because I have to be careful about not giving specific legal advice. You know, it's an ethical problem for me to start advising people, giving specific advice for their specific situations when I'm not their attorney and I don't know what their overall objectives are, their industry is, their specific industry. So I don't want to give her specific advice, but I will say that if you think that your use of the mark fits into what he's describing his goods and services of, then you want to object to all of them. If you are objecting to some of them, then you'll just object to some.
Is that how SEO Moz would have filed?
SEO Moz, we objected to all.
Okay.
Now, my application is online, and my notice of opposition is online and public knowledge, and I encourage people to look at that and what arguments we're making.
Now, what if Dave or I, we're up here in Canada, what if we went and registered SEO in Canada? Could we go after Mr. Gambert?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. There are, you know, typically if Gambert was then trying to use SEO in Canada to market the Canadian clients, then if you beat him to the registration, then yeah, you could stop him from using it in Canada. Now, there's this overall, there is such a thing as registering your trademark internationally through WIPO. And in order to register yours internationally so that you can own that mark throughout most of the world, you first have to file within your home country. So theoretically, if he were to get this certification granted here in the U.S., his next step would be to file through this international organization, WIPO, which would give him protection over most of the world, including Canada, anyone who signed onto this treaty. And then you guys, if you haven't already registered, you'd be in trouble. So there is potential for him to take this beyond the boundaries of the U.S. market. It's just kind of a race on who can get it registered first.
I was only asking facetiously, but you know, now that you mention it, I speaking for myself, I have no intention of registering SEO in Canada, and I'm pretty sure Dave doesn't either. just before we get the hate mail,
right.
Sarah, is there anything else that people in the community can do? Let's say that our listeners go and they file their opposition right now. Is there anything else they can do above and beyond filing opposition?
At that point, it's kind of a wait and see. And, you know, in terms of strategies, it may be that Mr. Gambert won't respond at all to my notice of opposition. And if he doesn't respond at all, we win by default, which is the ideal situation. If he does respond and want to proceed forward in this adversarial opposition proceedings, then it will go on and there'll be, I will have to marshal together my evidence to present to the Trademark Trial and Appeal Board and explain to them, you know, what SEO is and why we feel that this is a violation, and go through the history of use for SEO to explain to the court how far back and generic this term is. And at that time, I may or may not be calling on sort of captains of industry here to help me provide evidence to the Trademark Trial and Appeal Board. Other than that, that's why it's so important to make this request for time, for more time, or file your notice of opposition, because you really need to get your voice. If you want your voice heard, that's the only way it's really going to count. You know, all the letters to the editor and all the mean blog posts you write isn't really going to do anything for the Trademark Trial and Appeal Board. So
does Gambert have to reply to every notice of opposition?
Yes, he has to answer all of them. Yes.
So we could seriously gum the guy up for like months on end.
Yeah. We could, although if I was the Trademark Trial and Appeal Board and most of the notices of opposition really make the sort of same claims, same generic claims, I might consolidate them. And certainly if I was Gambert, I would request more time to respond to each of them. And again, those requests for time are liberally granted because the court wants to give you time to make smart arguments and to be prepared and to do your research. Everybody suffers if you rush to file at the last minute and leave something out. And it's, everyone should have access to justice and the time to do it. So,
now, how do we keep up with all of this as we're trying to follow its progress through? Is there an individual location? I can obviously follow my filings, but is there one location where we can kind of see how this overall process is progressing?
Yeah, everything that gets filed in a trademark application, well, I should qualify that. There are some trademark applications that remain private for a period of time, and that's a different topic. But certainly Gambert's application and any notice of opposition or request for extension of time that is filed is all public knowledge. And not only is it public, it's all available online. So you can go online to the website I listed before. You can also link to it from the article I wrote that will give you just almost up-to-the-minute access to any documents that have been filed and the status of those cases.
Now, if Jason Gambert loses, is it over? Or can anyone else try to file for the same thing?
Anyone else can try to file. What I believe would happen, it's very nearly happened in this case, that the reviewing attorney would catch it and say, I'm sorry, SEO is a generic term. It's used commonly in this industry, and we're going to reject your application. Jason Gambert was so persistent and so, I think, confusing that he managed to sort of obfuscate the whole process and got through to the next level. So I think the chances of anyone getting this far again are pretty slim, but it is technically possible.
Okay, we're rounding out the hour very rapidly. I know that we have news that we're going to have to go to soon. Sarah, thank you so much for spending more time than expected answering our questions and our listeners' questions. Is there anything else that you have to say to the listeners before we let you go?
No, just please, if you believe that you would be harmed by this, I encourage you to take the time to file for a request for extension of time this afternoon, and don't delay. We can use all the support we can get here. And thank you. Thank you very much for your interest overall. That's been really impressive, the response, and I appreciate you guys taking the time to do it today.
You rock, Sarah. Thank you so much for being on the show.
You're welcome.
Well, there you have it. That was Sarah Bird, Esquire, the legal counsel to SEO Moz. And if we want to get opposition to Jason Gambert's application for SEO as his personal trademark, friends, get it in today. If you look in the webmasterradio.fm chat room, the URL for the U.S. Patent Office, which is estta.uspto.gov, that again, estta.uspto.gov, URLs in the chat room. get in there, file your opposition. It's your trademark, friends. This is your industry. You, me, Dave, and the rest of us have built this industry, and this kid is trying to grab it and trying to grab the basic acronym that describes our industry as his trade. That just seems pretty uncool and pretty unfair. Wow. Have you got yours registered yet, Dave?
I will be doing that as soon as the show's over.
Well, I think the show's going to be over pretty soon. We're rounding out pretty quickly. I got a couple things I want to mention. You know what today is? Today is Neil Patel's birthday. I don't know if we're going to do it, but I think that everybody out there in Webmaster Radio Land should, you know, put the little princess hat on and sing a happy song to Neil.
Happy birthday!
And, you know, I also think everybody should send him an email and fill up his Facebook account full of messages. Repeatedly.
Oh, he's a great guy. Great guy.
What else is going on out there? Hey, what the heck is this with Yahoo? Did you check out Yahoo's report, Q1 report the other day?
I was admittedly surprised, and pleasantly so for Yahoo.
They actually beat the street's expectations. They made their numbers. They've solidified their defense against Microsoft a little bit. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the coming days, especially given that I think this week is the termination of Steve Ballmer's 3-week ultimatum.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think this is just a. I don't know if it's going to kill. Well, it certainly won't kill the deals sort of with Microsoft. But I certainly think, if nothing else, this is going to up the ante in what it's going to take. And if they can do this, if they can show some additional revenue from depending on how it all goes with Google feeding the ads through, what that may increase in their revenue. They may be able to push it to a price that just doesn't really work for Microsoft at that point, and it could work. This I don't think is enough to do it in and of itself, but they are making some good moves forward, and they may be able to just put it at a price point that just doesn't make sense anymore for Microsoft.
You know, I actually wish Sarah were still on the phone, because I got two words to say to this one: shareholder lawsuits. I mean, this is going to get ugly crazy, eh?
Yes,
Microsoft
it is.
Walks away.
Yes, it is.
Oh, my goodness. You're going to see Yahoo shareholders just go ape.
Well, it's going to be just absolutely a total... Well, I was going to say debacle, but that's not the right word. But it is going to be very interesting to watch. I mean, of course, as a sideline person, not a shareholder, this is just going to be an awesome thing to watch. Just from a spectator sport kind of perspective. I don't know how geeky I sounded right there. Obviously, very. But yeah, I think this is what Yahoo's managing to kind of pull off, beating the expectations here. I think that's just awesome. Really ups it and makes this a much more interesting game for us to watch, and how this affects the deal with Microsoft is going to be a really interesting thing as well. And yeah, you're right. The issues with what the shareholders are going to be doing and stuff I'm really looking forward to the next quarter and seeing what this quarter holds for us.
Absolutely. And Dave, we got to take it out now. I'm getting a message from studio. We have the live Affiliate Marketing Insider show coming up in 5 minutes. Great show directly after Webcology. So we got to go. We're out. Friends, this has been Jim Hedger from MetaMen.com and Dave Davies from Beanstalk Dash Inc. We've had some great guests on today. We have another amazing show coming to you next week at this time. Stay tuned. Live Affiliate Marketing Insider is coming up next. And thanks, Brasco, for engineering. And friends, thank you for listening to WebmasterRadio.fm. Talk to you next week.